A truly transformed person understands that thoughts are ways in which we can make virtually anything happen. About 6 weeks ago, I received a letter from the Science of Mind Church in Monterey, California, asking me if I would be willing to come out there and speak for their people. I called my secretary and I said, would you call these people and would you tell them that I'm going to Monterey on Monday? This was a Saturday. I just happened to be going to Monterey that Monday. And I said, would you ask them if they would connect with me while I was there and I could meet with them and we could discuss whether I would come out there and do a seminar for them in the fall? And she said, yes, I'll do that. Okay, my secretary's name is Maya. So I called her back, and this was Saturday, and I said to her, did you call them? And she said, yes, I called, but there was no answer, so I left a message on the machine. And I thought, that's strange. So I said, well, I'll call. And now I want you to know this is something I've never done before. In 15 years of having seminars and speeches and so on, I have never picked up the phone and done that and called myself. I always let her do that. So I said, I'll just call. I had the letter right here, and I called. The phone rings, and the lady answers, and she said, this is the bookstore. I said, oh, great. I said, you sent me a letter, and she said, yes, I talked to Maya yesterday. And I thought, you talked to Maya yesterday? But she just told me she called, and she didn't talk to anybody. She said, oh, no, we had a long discussion, and she said that you were going to be here next week and that we would contact you next week. I said, oh, Well, I said, I'll be there next week. So she said, okay, that's fine. I got to Monterey, and I had to give a talk there on Monday, and then Tuesday, I get a phone call from this lady who has a radio show there, this New Age radio show. And she said, would you like to do a radio show for me this afternoon at 3:15? Right before the Oakland Athletics baseball game comes on. They have a New Age radio talk show in Monterey. I don't know why, but I guess knowing the way the Athletics have played in recent years, you know, anything will help. So I said, well, how did you know that I was in Monterey? She said, I walked into the bookstore in Monterey. She said, I was holding a copy of your book, Gifts from Icus. And the lady that was in the bookstore said to me, oh, and she's the only person that knew I was in Monterey. She said, oh, he's here this week. And she said, oh, he really is? Well, if he's here, maybe I could get him to do the radio show. So she gave me the number of where you're staying here at the Hyatt Regency, and that's why I'm calling, and I want to know if you can do the show at 3:15. Meantime, this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said, well, 3:15, I mean, that's an hour from now. And I, you know, she said, well, just can you do it or can't you? And I said, no. All right, I'll do it. Pick me up at 3:15, I'll do it for 45 minutes. What's the big deal? She said, great. So she drives over and picks me up, and we go over, and I do the show. And I talk for 45 minutes with this lady who has the show. We finished the show, and it went very well. It was very nice. She's going to drive me back to the high. I said, let's stop at that bookstore. I want to meet that lady that told this other lady and who happened to just walk in and have this book and knew and all of this. She said, fine, it's right on the next block. And she turns around and she pulls into this bookstore. And I walk into the bookstore. She said, oh, hi, how you doing? And I said, well, I'll sign whatever books you have. And I looked around. I always like little metaphysical bookstores. There are so many great little things in there. All of a sudden, this giant walks into the bookstore. I mean, giant. We're talking 6'10" if we're talking an inch. I mean, huge guy. Tears streaming down his eyes. And he said, I gotta have Icus. I gotta read Icus, because we had talked about this on the show, this book. And she said, well, the author is right over there. So this giant walks over to me. I mean, I don't know if you ever have a 6'10". I mean, this is like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar size. I mean, we're talking a huge guy. And he comes over and he puts his arms around me and he picks me up. He said, I was going to kill myself today. I said, come on. He said, I was ready to kill myself today. This was the day I was going to do it. There was no doubt in my mind. I've been thinking about it, and I just don't. And in Monterey, they have this little park where I have all these ducks right in the middle of the town, a little lake going through it and all. He said, I went over there to lay down to think about how I was going to do it this afternoon. And I took my radio with me. And I put the radio down next to me, and I tuned into this AM station, which I've never heard before, and your voice came on the radio. And he said, I came right over here, and on the radio I had said, always choose life. Everything that makes the universe work is life. It's positive. Every step that you make in a positive direction is something that makes something else positive happen, and something else, and something else. And that's how the universe works. And negative is something that keeps the universe from working. All right? And I had talked about that whenever you stop yourself from doing something, or say that you can't do it, or find something wrong with something, then you stop the natural progression of ideas and things and growth, so that positive always leads to something and negative always stops something. That's how the universe works, and that the whole system works on a system of progression, of positive progression. And this man was standing there sobbing, saying that he was going to choose life. Now, I ask you, and I tell you that story because I want to know how that happened. I mean, do you know how many things had to happen in order for that man's life to be saved that day? And if you saw him, you would know he wasn't faking it. My secretary had to screw everything up. I then had to do something I had never done before, and one person in a city who knew I was there and no one else, because I had asked her not to tell people. I didn't want to do press interviews and all of that. And somebody has to then walk in at that exact moment with a book showing, and by the way, the book that she had was a book that I had sent to her 9 months before. I've sent it out to several hundred thousand people around the world. And so that had to arrive, and she had to arrive in there, and she had to say that, and then this had to happen, and then I had to say yes to the radio station, no, yes, no, yes, no, yes, yes, all right, yes. And then I had to go over there and I do it, and I had to talk about just that thing, and he had to come, and he had to listen to it, and he had to come over there, and all of those things had to happen. That is something that you call synchronicity, or whatever it is. I wonder, just by a show of hands, how many people have had that experience in their life? Almost everybody's hand goes up. I think that thoughts are things. That's the only way to put it so that we can get it into the context that I'm talking about.
And you find that there are some basic principles, some basic truths that have always been there. And it's almost as if what we have to do as human beings is learn how to tap into these truths, how to tap into these forces that are there for us. And they're there. And the universe is a place, to me, that is a perfect place, that has forces in it, that has energy in it. We are part of that energy. We are part of that force. We are part of that perfection. And when you understand these principles and make yourself available for the principles and begin to tune it in, the example that I like to use is if you have a radio dial and you start tuning your dial, you'll be down at one end and you'll hear rock music, all right? And then before long, you'll hear classical music. Then you'll hear country music. And you'll hear a talk show, and all of these things, they're all broadcasting, they're all out there. Now, you may just happen to tune in to rock. You tune in and womp, womp, bam, 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 boom, and you'll hear that, and you'll say, all right, and you listen to that for a while, and then you go past that, and then you'll hear, I can't stop loving you, and you got country music. Now, the rock music is still playing. It's not like just because you've tuned to something else that isn't there. Then you tune past that and you hear somebody talking on the dial and you'll hear somebody else doing real classical and then soft contemporary music. And they're all out there. And the question is not what is out there playing. The question is, what do you tune into? And you can tune into just about anything that you want to in the universe. And the force of harmony and the forces of love are there. And it's almost because they're invisible and because we can't get a hold of it and grab it and put it in our pocket and touch it and so on, we tend to assume, because we think in more pragmatic terms, that those things aren't there. And that's one of the things I want to do in this program, is to take some of those principles that seem so esoteric or so difficult for us to get a hold of and to make them available to us and to understand that, and perhaps through the use of stories or examples, illustrate to people that we can have any of that. You begin to expect synchronicity, not be surprised by it. By synchronicity, I mean the term that Carl Jung coined in describing how what are seemingly unrelated events all relate to each other. And you begin to see that there are very strange connections to everything. And the fella in the bookstore out in California. But these kinds of things, you begin to know that if you're trying to find someone, that thought can help you do it. I had a wonderful story of a lady, her name was Patricia Gray. We had insurance problems. I wanted to get somebody in the insurance industry who could get all my insurance taken care of, everything, all of the different kinds of insurance that I had, the different house insurance and the car insurances and all of that. And there's five or six of them. And this lady had called one time and left a card, and her name was Patricia Gray, and we'd lost the card. And I kept saying to my wife, if I could only get a hold of this lady. And she had found a tape of mine that had been recorded 8 years earlier in an apartment that she had moved into, and it was unlabeled. And she had met me in a restaurant and given me this card. And I said to my wife, if only I could find Patricia Gray. And then I started just focusing on that and thinking about that. And I came in from running one day, and I said to my wife, I said, I had Patricia Gray's card. And I threw it on the table. I said, here's Patricia Gray's card. You can call her now and get the insurance number. She said, what? What did you do? What happened? I said, I was running through the neighborhood. Her ex-mother-in-law lives three blocks away, and she was driving down there, and she stopped. She said, aren't you Wayne Dyer? And I said, yeah, of course, I'm used to that. That happens quite often. And she said, well, I'm Patricia Gray. The moment that she said that, I thought, there was a time when I would have just said, oh, that's just another one of those silly coincidences, and those things don't happen. Now, I have a very strong belief that everything in the universe is connected, and particularly through thought, and thought is the highest energy form, and you can use it to bring about whatever you want, and it becomes something that you almost expect rather than something that you are alarmed by any longer. There was a book written by Dan Millman called The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, and he was told as he was learning how to have this higher consciousness by his teacher, whose name was Socrates, to go out on a rock and sit there until he could come in and have something important to say. And he went out and he sat for like 6 hours, and everything he thought of, he thought, well, that's not important, and no, that's really not important. And he starts looking at your mind and thinking about all the things that it thinks about and gets preoccupied with, and hardly anything matters. We get into our little drama of our little life and whether it's going to rain or whether we're going to make enough money and all, and you start thinking, but does that matter? He would go out and he would say something to Socrates, and Socrates would say, no, that's not important. And he'd go back out there and he'd sit for another 6 hours and he'd meditate. And he finally came in after like 24 hours and he said, there are no ordinary moments. And Socrates said, yes, that matters. That's an important, intelligent thing to think, to understand. That every moment in your life is a miracle. And that everything that you're going through in your life, you can stand back and just watch yourself go through it. You can observe yourself go through it. And after doing that for a while, and you begin to say, this isn't really me. This isn't really me. I'm getting up in the morning now, and I'm getting on the freeway, and I'm going, but this isn't really what I am. I'm this consciousness that's behind all of this. And after a while, that consciousness is no longer something that you see yourself as separated from. You see that as what you are. And then you start changing. You start having dramatic new changes in your life. And that old consciousness is no longer there, that old consciousness of accumulation and having to get things done. And then you become much more peaceful with it all. And then you begin to realize after a while that everything that I'm doing is all right. It's fine. Even when I mess it up, and even when the deal doesn't go through, that there's something to learn. There's an opportunity in that obstacle or in that failure. You get this incredible internal peace with all the things that you're doing and all the roles that you're playing. And yet you know that you're going through all of these roles, and it's like the only way you ever know when you're dreaming is to awaken. I mean, just think about it. If you never woke up, you would never know you were dreaming. That's true at this level of consciousness, too. The only way to see that this is all an illusion, that you are destroying yourself with things that aren't even real, you know, like whether this person likes me or doesn't, or whether I get that money or whether I don't, and all that stuff that you can't do anything with anyway, you begin to say that, well, if I'm going to mess myself up, I'm not going to mess myself up with illusions, with things that don't matter. So I just think I'll stop messing myself up completely. I won't even think like that any longer. And before long, instead of being disharmony and full of anger and upsettedness and hatred and all that, you become filled with acceptance, a new kind of love, a new kind of approach to all of the things that you're doing in your life. And it's like it just doesn't matter any longer. It's not as if you act that way. You act as if what you're doing matters, but deep inside of you, in that little special place where you know that you are thought and thought is you, and you are a higher consciousness and a higher awareness than all of this other stuff, you just sort of stand back and you get more productive, and you get less consumed with what other people are thinking, you get yourself totally out of controlling relationships, and you find yourself moving away from all of that kind of stuff. that used to be such a very important part of your life, trying to get this one to like you and trying to please that one, or being in a relationship in which someone is in authority over you, controlling you, you leave that. That all goes, and you avoid confrontation and conflict because that isn't you any longer. And you're much more peaceful with the whole thing. And then, after a while, you start looking for the beauty in everything that everybody else does, or the joy, or the serenity, or the ease, or the peace, whatever you want to call it. You start seeing that in everyone that you run into. And so somebody will cut you off on the freeway, or somebody will yell at you, or somebody will be obnoxious towards you, or someone will not pay their debt towards you, or any number of things that at one time would have driven you absolutely insane. You look at them and you see, but that's where they are on their path. A criticizer is someone who is just where they are in life. They're all gifts. Everything that happens to you, everybody that you run into in your life, they teach you something about yourself. And to me, I just see all of those people as tests. They're just tests for me to see whether I can, in fact, send them something useful and positive and not let them get to me. You see, the minute that a criticizer or someone who's nasty to you starts getting to you, what you've really done is given up control of your life to them. You've said that their opinions of you are more important than your own. Or you've just said, here's my strings right here. You just pull them for a little while, and I'll go around being upset because of the way you are reacting to me. But if you see them as just that's where they are in their path, and that's how they behave, and that it has nothing to do with you, you're not going to make yourself miserable because they choose to act or react to you that way, then before long, you can turn those kind of people around. You really can. You take two or three people looking at a given situation, and one of them sees the anger, and another one sees the hostility, and somebody else sees the love behind it all. And the person who sees the love behind the encounter, wherever it may be, has a much better chance of not only getting what they want, but helping to turn that person around. I mean, I can think of at an airport where there's a lot of people fighting over how they're going to get seated on a plane. It's happened to me many, many times. There'll be people up there getting very antagonistic, and the clerk is trying to do her best, and she's trying to be as polite as she can. And the person who's antagonistic can only see the antagonism in this person. And I'll be watching the situation and observing, standing back, the next person in line. And there might be two or three of those people up there, and they're all giving this person a hard time. And I'm looking at how nice she's handling it, and what a kind person she is, and how she's trying to do her absolute best. And when it's my turn to get up there, I say, wow, you're really having to struggle. You have to put up with a lot of stuff when you do a job like this. And she'll go something like, oh, yeah. I said, you know, you really handle it well, and you don't lose your cool. And you know what? I get moved up to first class, you know, or I get the very seat that I want. She will go out of her way. When you're looking for the good, you can make any situation, almost any situation, turn around for you. But not only that, what happens is after a while, that becomes the habit. And then you don't even see the negative because you don't have that in you. You're not tuning into that kind of stuff. And you start seeing it on freeways. You wave to people and thank them for letting you in, or you expect that somebody will let you in. And if somebody doesn't, you don't internalize that. You don't say, oh, these people, who are they? You don't do any of that. You just let that go. You let them go right by. And you go on to the next person. Before long, someone will put their hand up and they'll let you in. And you say thank you and you smile and you get what you want for yourself without having to be attached or hang on to all of the negativity that most people see.
This is the end of Side 5. Please fast forward the tape to begin Side 6.